Jesus here is sending out his 12 apostles, having just appointed them. He's instructing them, he's teaching them, he's training them in readiness to go out. And he says to them, coming in partway through, acquire no gold or silver or copper for your belts, no bag for your journey or two tunics or sandals or a staff. For the laborer deserves his food. And whatever town or village you enter, find out who is worthy in it and stay there until you depart. As you enter the house, greet it. And if the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet when you leave that house or town. Truly I say to you, it will be more tolerable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah than for that town. Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues, and you'll be dragged before governors and kings for my sake, to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child. And children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you'll be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher and the servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven. I think in my enthusiasm I went slightly further there, but there we go. As you can see, we're focusing on verses 26 through to 31. So the last part of the reading that we had earlier on. And also, as you can see, my title is The Sermon on the Mission, Part 3. Well, you've not had Part 1 and 2. Sorry about that. But anyway, we're cutting in partway through this sermon that Jesus is kind of preaching, because Matthew's Gospel is has a number of sections of distinct parts where Jesus is teaching for longer periods. And the first section like that in Matthew's Gospel is called rather unimaginatively, the Sermon on the Mount, because he was preaching from a mountain. And that's chapters 5, 6, and 7. This is the second time where we have a concentrated period of Jesus' teaching. And I've called it the Sermon on the Mission, because he's sending his disciples. This isn't preaching to everybody. This is his apostles who he's sending out. And he's talking about the mission that he's sending them out on. Now, I wonder how easy you find it to be on mission for the Lord Jesus Christ. Whether you even see yourself to be on mission. Whether you think of mission as that which missionaries do in other countries. Well, the reality is that Jesus has given all of his people a mission. A mission to go and make disciples, to go and preach the gospel, to go and make him known. So how do you find it? Trying to share the gospel with people that you come into contact with. How do you find it? Speaking of Jesus, speaking of your faith, speaking about the Bible, speaking about the church. Well, here as we're eavesdropping on Jesus' sermon on the mission, as he's sending them out to proclaim his kingdom, you certainly cannot complain that Jesus is one of those kind of smooth salespeople who give you all the good news and none of the bad news, telling you only what you want to hear, what is likely to lead you to buy what they're trying to sell you, giving you all the positives and none of the negatives. If you were listening well to the reading earlier on, you'll have seen he's just told them in earlier verses some pretty tough stuff about the mission that he's sending them on. I mean, this perhaps isn't the toughest, but back in verse 9 he says, as he sends them out, acquire no gold or silver or copper for your belts, no bag for the journey or two tunics or sandals or a staff. Don't take any resources, financial resources, food with you, because you'll be supplied for on your mission. Well, that takes faith, doesn't it? That's a pretty challenging start. That actually these were to go out with no great backing, no resources to back up their mission. They were to trust God that he would keep his word through Jesus, and that he would supply for them as they serve. So that there's a pretty tough start. But it gets harder as well. Verse 16, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Well, which would you rather be in that situation, a sheep or a wolf? It's clear that the wolf is going to win, isn't it? The sheep never wins a fight with a wolf. And he's saying, look, you're going to be like sheep among wolves. They are going to be ferocious, strong, dangerous. So this is a recognition that they're going to face significant opposition as they go on in this mission. And in fact, he gets more specific then in the next two verses. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues, and you'll be dragged before governors and kings for my sake. This is going to be a time when they'll be treated really badly, when they'll be beaten and flogged. They will come before the judicial systems of the places where they are. This is hard. And it gets even down to the family, verse 21. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father, his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and you'll be hated by all for my name's sake. Wow. This is not a great call-up speech, is it? This isn't a great encouragement to go out on this mission. Even within families, there will be treachery. That there will be those who will be against those who are seeking to make Jesus known. So you wonder, how are the disciples feeling by now as Jesus presents how challenging it's going to be, how dangerous, how treacherous it will be for them to be on this mission? Well, it's one thing to think about how they would feel. How do you feel? Because this is the eternal and abiding word of God. The basic principles of this will apply for us today. That when we go to seek to make Jesus known, we will face opposition. There'll be those who oppose us. This doesn't clearly mean every single believer will be betrayed to death, otherwise there wouldn't be any believers left. But this is the kind of ultimate opposition we may face. These are the challenges. This is what we need to be prepared for. I guess you're not feeling particularly encouraged to hear this. Probably not feeling all fired up and ready to go. More likely to be looking for the exit. But now, as we pick up in verse 26, he comes to some encouragements, some very real encouragements. And it starts with this phrase, so have no fear. Have no fear. Do not be afraid. This is Jesus' word to them. They need not be afraid. Now it says, so have no fear. It's not because of these many dangers, he's saying, but despite of these many dangers, don't be scared of them. So we've been talking about these dangers, but I don't want you to be afraid of them, even though you're probably quaking in your boots at this point. But I want to calm you down and say, you do not need to fear. This is actually probably the most common command, certainly one of the most common commands in the Bible. If you Google top commands in the Bible, most common commands in the Bible, you will find three of the top four say it's this. One has an alternative suggestion, and to be honest, I've not counted them all myself, so that's why I say it's probably one of the most common commands in the Bible, to not be afraid. But when we talk of it as a command, we need to be careful how we hear that. This is not the barking command of a sergeant major to soldiers, don't be afraid. This is the loving word of a father to his children who are fearful of some very real dangers they are facing. Do not be afraid. So Jesus actually spells out three reasons why they and we, you, don't need to be afraid when we are on mission for him. So the first one is this. On mission, we don't need to fear because the truth will come out. The truth will come out. Look at verse 26. So have no fear of them. Why? For nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. I don't think, to me anyway, I don't think it's immediately obvious why that's a huge encouragement or a reason not to be afraid. So let's unpack it. Let's understand what he's actually saying. He's saying, look, they may be plotting in the ways that he's been speaking about, brother betraying brother, the authorities flogging you, these kind of things. They may be plotting in secret. They may even dress up their persecution in the clothing of saying that they are doing God's work, that they are doing the more righteous thing, that they are on God's side and it's you that's wrong. But Jesus is saying, look, one day everything will be crystal clear. Everything will be seen for what it is. There'll be no more secrets, no more pretense. Their evil opposition will be seen to be exactly that. And your devoted, loving service to the Lord Jesus will be seen to be exactly that as well. So, have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. When will this be? When will all this come to light? Well, Jesus doesn't specify it here, but more hints at it. But the rest of the Bible would certainly add the reality that there is coming one day, the day of judgment, the day of Jesus' return. And on that day of judgment, everything will be seen to be exactly what it truly is. Ecclesiastes 12:14 says, "For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing." Not just the obvious things, but the secret things as well, whether good or evil. That's the day of judgment. And it's a double-edged judgment. It's a judgment on the secret thing, whether it's good or evil. And so the reality of this encouragement that Jesus is giving to them, that they need not fear, because the truth will come out, is that there is truth coming out about the motives and behavior of those who oppose Jesus. And there's truth coming out for those who are following Jesus and making him known in this world. And that's something that Jesus is completely in step with in his teaching in Matthew 25. When he talks about the Son of Man coming in his glory, all his angels with him and all being gathered together for judgment, and then there being this division. And some being sent away into eternal punishment and others to eternal life. The same two-edged judgment that is coming. It's very clear, blatantly clear, that this does not assure us that everything will go well in this life. He's not been saying, "Now all that warning I was giving you about betrayal and persecution, no, none of it will really happen if you trust me." but actually, no, that will happen. That will happen in time. But in eternity, the truth will come out. And rewards will be given. And what we need to do is put the troubles, the trials, the persecutions of today in perspective with eternity. And that's what Jesus gives us, a good reason not to fear. So do not fear, have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed or hidden that will not be known. We need to set it in the perspective of eternity. That's why we read Psalm 73 earlier. We read the psalmist saying that his feet had almost slipped. He was almost beside himself. His faith was almost failing when he saw how the ungodly were prospering in this world, and it all seemed meaningless that he was trying to serve God well, and yet he seemed to suffer so much. But it all changed. It all changed when he entered the sanctuary into the presence of God. And he saw that God had set their feet in slippery places and that one day judgment would come for them, and yet he would be in the eternal glory of God. You see, eternity will settle all debts. Forgiveness is free, freely available for the vilest persecutor now. This does not mean that every single persecutor of those who follow Jesus, of those who are on mission for Jesus, will suffer eternally. If they turn to Jesus Christ for salvation, then they can be forgiven. Just think of the Apostle Paul, who formerly was Saul of Tarsus, who instigated persecution, even martyrdom, having Christians killed. He instigated that, and yet he was forgiven. He was brought low. He repented of his sin. He turned to Jesus and became an apostle, one sent out on mission for Jesus. But if that forgiveness through Jesus Christ is not sought through faith and repentance in time, then the price will be paid for eternity following Judgment Day. Now, what is our response then to be to this? Well, our response is certainly not to fear, so do have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed or hidden that will not be known. But also, there's another response that Jesus points to in verse 27. He then says, "What I tell you in the dark, say in the light. and what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. What's he saying? He's saying, look, if you don't need to fear them, you can be emboldened. What I've been telling you quietly, as we've met together and we've talked, he says, I want you to go out and tell everybody. Be emboldened, speak freely, speak openly, joyfully, with conviction about me, about Jesus, about the way of salvation. With real conviction that this, that they've got to proclaim, is a life-saving message that everybody needs to hear. So, on mission, we don't need to fear because the truth will come out. But secondly, on mission, we do not need to fear because opponents can only do limited damage. Now again, this is an issue of getting things into perspective. The first one kind of set it in perspective with eternity, of everything coming out into the open and judgment following that. But here it's a different perspective, but again it's an issue of perspective. Verse 28, and do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. There's the perspective. They can only hurt your body. They can ultimately even kill your body. But that's all they can do. It's serious stuff, isn't it? They can do that, and that is not good at all. But Jesus wants you to have this perspective. They cannot touch your soul. They cannot kill your soul. They cannot harm your soul. They cannot harm your relationship with God. They may kill you physically. They may torture you physically. But your love for Jesus can remain strong. It can even grow through such sufferings. They cannot touch your soul. So this is very limited damage that they can do. And ultimately it's also very temporary damage that they can do. Because the reality is that the hope of the gospel states that when Jesus comes again, we'll actually receive a new body. So that which they have tortured, that which they have damaged, that which they have killed, will be raised. A new body, an immortal body, far better than our present body. So it's limited and it's also temporary. It is not lasting. And we need to get this in perspective with what, on the other hand, God can do. Verse 28, the second half of it says, rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Now that's a kickback to those persecutors, those who would kill the body. Jesus is indicating that actually they have far more reason to fear because the God they oppose can actually destroy both soul and body in hell. But we mustn't ignore the fact that actually Jesus says to his disciples, because that's who he's speaking to, rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. We who are followers of Jesus are being told that we too should fear him. We too should fear him who can kill both body and soul in hell. Now that could sound like it's replacing one fear with another, and actually with a much worse one. Fearing him who can kill both body and soul in hell. But let's bear in mind that fear has a big range of meaning, from that quaking fear on the one hand, through to respect and honour and awe on the other hand. And we tend to see fear as only being a negative thing, but in reality and in the Bible, it isn't. It isn't always a negative thing. And let me give you an example where in this life it's not a negative thing. When I was 13, I had the privilege of going on holiday to America, and we popped up for a few days into Canada via the Niagara Falls. Now, I suggest that there is a healthy fear of the Niagara Falls. I don't know whether you're still allowed this close. Health and safety makes me think you're probably not. But anyway, we were able to get very close. There was a viewing kind of balcony within almost arm's stretch of the falls. You could almost reach out and touch them. Now, I didn't stand there quaking because I trusted that this balcony and this, whatever it was, iron railing round it was utterly solid. I wasn't in any danger. I didn't feel to be in any danger. And yet I had a healthy fear that told me quite easily, don't climb over it. Don't climb over it, because if you climb over it, disaster could follow. And that's something about our fear of God. We're safe in him, but we recognise it will be an awful thing to fall into the hands of an angry God. So we should fear him. We should respect our God to the degree where we recognise we need to do what he's called us to do. We need to go on mission. We need to be on mission. We need to make Jesus known. And we don't need to be fearful of those who would oppose us, because they can only deal with the body. It's God who can deal with both the body and the soul, and therefore it's him we should fear. His word we should fear. His word we should obey. That's the perspective that we need. Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Let's face it, today, in the UK anyway, we're not anywhere near this point, as in the point of risking our lives by making Jesus known. People these days in this country might damage our reputation, or might ruin our quiet day, or harm some of our friendships, and those things matter. But how much more true is it for us, therefore, to say, look, on mission we don't need to fear, because our opponents can only do limited damage. We're not being threatened with death at this point in this country. So what are we scared of? The reality is that our enemy is a subtle enemy, and he knows sometimes that the subtle temptations are more effective than the big blatant ones. And he knows that some of us would stand firm against the possibilities of being arrested or martyred for our faith. And yet, when somebody just says nasty things about us, we tone down what we say and speak more politely, so that they actually don't understand the gospel at all. We need to keep it in perspective. These people we face can only do very limited damage. Therefore, we don't need to fear them. And then thirdly and finally, on mission, we don't need to fear because your Father actually cares for every little detail of your lives. I know that's a wordy third point, but every single word of it matters. On mission, we don't need to fear because your Father actually cares for every little detail of your lives. And again, this is an issue of getting it in perspective. Look at verse 29. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father? But even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. You see the point that Jesus is making? This is the recognition that even birds are cared for by God. I don't know about you, I've got nothing against a sparrow. They're nice little birds. There's a lot of them in the world, 1.6 billion. But they aren't particularly valuable. Jesus talks about them being up for sale. I've never seen them in the supermarket. Next, you know, chicken, no. Duck, maybe. Sparrow, no. Why? Little meat on them. Not a lot on there. Probably far too many bones. They're not very valuable. But not one of them falls to the ground apart from, Jesus simply puts it, your Father. Your Father's knowledge, your Father's care, your Father's sovereign rule. Not one of those sparrows dies apart from your Father's will. That's incredible. He has such detailed care and concern over every detail of our lives. Now, we could apply this to every illness, every hurt relationship we handle, every concern we might have about our children or grandchildren, every worry we might have about money, every leak we might have in the roof, every problem we might have with our cars. And applying this promise to those situations would be utterly helpful and absolutely correct. However, I will leave you to think about that, because I want to stick with the context of how Jesus is using it. And he's not actually using it here about every situation. It well applies to that. But he is talking about the reality of the fact of us facing opposition. He's back, verse 31, to the fear not therefore. Yes, he's talked about sparrows and hairs on our head by this point. But he says, fear not. He's still on this same theme of fear not, don't worry about these persecutors. These persecutors, these opponents to the gospel. Because he wants us to see there's these 1.6 billion sparrows in the world. Not one of them falls to the ground apart from our Father's will. And then he takes us to the hairs on our head. Now, the average, and I know actually, you know, there's even in front of me, and even if I had a mirror seeing me, there's a great difference in the average of the number of hairs on our head. But the average, apparently, worldwide, is that each of us has about 100,000 hairs on our head. Now, take into account then that there are 8 billion people on the in the world. That's a lot of hairs that Jesus is talking about when he says in verse 30, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. He knows, he cares. He's numbered every little detail of your lives. So, we need to get this perspective. We need to get this perspective that he really cares about every little detail of our lives, and then say, fear not therefore. Fear not. He knows every little detail. He knows about the illness concerns, the money concerns, the car concerns. But actually here we're talking about the persecution concerns, the opposition when we're seeking to make Jesus known, the apathy when we're seeking to share the gospel. He knows. He even knows the hairs of your head. He even knows about every single sparrow. He cares. He really cares. I wonder if you're the kind of person who tends to think at this point, I can believe that for everybody else. I can encourage others to believe this, but you don't see it for yourself. You see yourself as somehow the exception to the rule. Well, let's notice that Jesus ends with his final encouragement by joining the dots, which were so obviously connected that it's amazing that he even needs to say it. But I think he says it because he knows there's always somebody who thinks this is for everybody else, but not for me. He says to them, end of verse 31, you are of more value than many sparrows. It's hard to believe that anybody thinks they're worth less value than a sparrow. But there are. And Jesus says, look, get the point of this. This point of God the Father superintending the life and death, sovereignly ruling, caring, knowing about even the death of a sparrow. You're of more value than many sparrows. You're of more value. If you're more value than many sparrows, you're definitely more value than one sparrow. So hear that. Believe it. Know that's how valuable. That's what you're worth to God. And of course, this is a classic understatement from Jesus, because of course, you're worth his own blood. He went to the cross to shed his blood, to bring you salvation. That's what you're worth to him. You are worth that much to God. So let's be sure we don't need to fear. We can be bold in mission. We can be forthright in mission, because our Father actually cares about every single little detail of our lives. So nothing will happen outside of his control. Nothing will happen outside of his care. And we don't need to fear because, well, the truth will come out. Our motives will come out. Other people's motives will come out. Righteousness will be seen to be righteous. Evil will be seen to be evil. And those opponents we face, they can do very limited damage. They can only touch the body. Let's fear, let's respect, let's love him who deals with both body and soul. We're going to sing to close with, when I fear my faith will fail, Christ will hold me fast. When the tempter would prevail, he will hold me fast. And the tempter certainly wants to prevail against us as we make Jesus known. He wants to stop us speaking of Christ. So let's remember that at those times he will hold us fast. He will keep us strong. He will keep us in his loving hands.